Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. Today, the role of interesting person is being played by my friend, Isabel Papoulias. Isabel is the CMO of Mediafly, which is a sales enablement platform and advisory provider. She has over 20 years of global account management experience for Fortune 500 brands. And actually, she joined Mediafly in a sales capacity before transitioning to building the marketing team for that company. Isabel, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Or as great as one can be right now.
Yes, I am living the dream with the little asterisk of living the dream within the midst of a global pandemic. Yeah. What's making it a little easier is during our conversation, I'm having a beer from our sponsor, Urban Renewal Brewery. I am drinking their Doppelbach, which is titled The Goat, and not after the animal. They're actually saying it's the G-O-A-T, the greatest of all time. I appreciate their confidence in their beer, and it's actually pretty tasty so far. So thank you to Urban Renewal for sponsoring our show today. Isabel, here's the question to start us off. I figured, why not start with something just small, minuscule, insignificant? You've seen business from both the sales and marketing side. What do you think is the future of sales and marketing alignment in a post-coronavirus era?
Oh, wow. That's small. Yeah. Small topic. How much time do we have? Okay.
Right.
So, you know, in many ways, I want to say the future is same as the past and the present. What I mean by that is the foundational elements are the same, right? We just need to be even better at it. But when I think about the foundational elements, I think of in threes primarily, which is it's the people, it's the leadership, right? And I think we often forget that when we talk about sales and marketing alignment. We often like to talk about process and technology and so on. But to me, the number one most important thing is having a sales leader and a marketing leader that actually want to align. And I know that's not an earth-shattering idea, but it also goes back to human relationships, right? If I'm going to think that I should be sitting in my ivory tower and I know better than you, that's not going to work, or vice versa, right?
It's interesting you say that, because every time I run across an organization that really has created some alignment between those two areas, sales and marketing, it almost invariably is because, for whatever reason, the sales and marketing leadership like each other. Mm-hmm. Almost just even on a personal level, mm-hmm. like they get along, and that kind of naturally leads to some cooperation, right?
Right. And if they don't like each other, or if they don't, they may like each other on a personal level, but feel that they don't have, one knows better than the other, or you're not going to bring me any value, so why should I collaborate with you? That's the CEO. That's where the CEO has to intervene, in my opinion. I mean, it's crucial to have those two truly want to collaborate. And of course, trust needs to be built and trust is earned, but you have to give each other the benefit of the doubt too. I need to give you the opportunity to gain my trust. And vice versa, if I start the relationship by assuming that you're not going to add any value, then that's already starting on the wrong footing. So the people side, to me, is the most important one. The second one is goals, having common goals. Mm-hmm. Helps a lot in the alignment, right? Fundamentally. So, and these days, marketing is, for most of the time, is measured on pipeline creation and revenue, right? Which is very similar to sales. It's not about MQLs, right? So having common goals goes a long way in creating that alignment. And then three is more the business strategy, ideal customer profile, really the segmentation side of things, which is, well, who are we going after?
Right.
And then how do we do it together so it's truly a 360 effort you know, account-based marketing to me is a big component of alignment. So there's the campaigns from the marketing side, and then there's the, so which is one-to-many, and then there's the one-to-one outreach from the sales side, but we're reaching out to the same target audience and the same priority companies, and based on our ideal customer profile that has been, that we have defined together.
So it's interesting what you said there just at the end, because what I was thinking is this idea of putting goals in place or defining a target audience, any of these things that you would normally think, okay, the marketing leadership is going to be responsible for, or the sales leadership is going to be responsible for. It is really important that they kind of do these things together, right? They kind of start from the very beginning going, we need to craft our strategy as a team, as opposed to, you know, marketing doing their thing and then sales doing their thing and then just like hoping that they fit together.
Right. And I'll add one more layer. You know, if we think at, we think about sales as acquisition, right? But really add the customer facing side of the revenue generation engine, right? So in our case, we customer success, right? In technology.
Yep.
Same thing. So they're part of sales. So it's a growth generation team, and that alignment also has to happen with them, right? So it's all customer facing, external facing entities in the organization that should align.
Gotcha. I know we actually had a guest, Brian Hall, in season 5 come on, who's focused on customer success for technology companies, which is, I know, kind of one of your areas of expertise in the tech world. But he said kind of something very similar, like customer success, sales, marketing, they all have to be on the same page, because if not, you get a very fragmented and very disjointed approach to the end customer. And often it's very off-putting, and you actually might lose that end customer because of it.
Exactly, right. And here's the other thing. The reason why I brought up customer success is because I know you said something that led me to that, but it's there is so much knowledge that team has. You know, they have access to the customers in a way that, you know, we have access to them too, but they have a knowledge of the customer, a true firsthand knowledge, because they're talking to them every day that marketing doesn't necessarily have, right? So and that the ideal customer is the one we already have. So if the job of marketing is primarily acquisition, go find new ones, we need to understand the ones we already have as best as possible to help drive acquisition efforts and messaging and inform all of that, right? And so customer success enables us that way. And then sales is in the trenches talking to prospects every day. So they're also bringing a knowledge that we need. And so it's really this feedback loop across the three teams only helps all three teams do their job a lot better. We're a lot more effective together than we are separately. You know, it's a team sport.
I think you're right on. And what I've always been, I guess amused is not the right word, but sardonically amused by, is how often leadership, in especially in this, is as you get larger in organizational size, how sometimes adversarial these different leadership groups will be, marketing or sales, customer success. And it's like, dude, you are all like on the same side. And in fact, if you can help the other part, you know, parts of the team be successful, they're going to make your life so much easier. Like you were even saying with customer success, having that intimate knowledge of your ideal customer. If you're in marketing, I'd almost be like, instead of trying to academically figure out who your best target market is, go talk to your customer success people and go, who are our best customers? Mm-hmm. Define them. I'm just going to go find more of them.
Right. Or I can just guess that by myself, but I won't be nearly as, I'm sure, impactful or successful doing it without them. Right. And it's true. I mean, look, every team can feel the urge to hold things close to the vest. Right.
Right.
And I mean, marketing can be about messaging. Like, of course, everyone in the company has an opinion about messaging. And it's like, well, why are you criticizing my campaign, you know, or whatever it may be, and so on. And then, and then customer success might be, why are you, you know, do you want to talk to my customers? And sales might be, you know, I know what I need to message out, right? But that goes back to the leadership point I made at the beginning, if the two leaders, in this case, the three, really understand the importance of collaboration at the onset, they are going to engage in such a way that they're going to look past this initial, that the initial friction. And there is going to be friction. We're human beings, right? It's kind of, it's a little bit, there's always a little bit of ego, even if you don't want to have some.
Yep.
But they're going to move past that. And then really it's with the wins. It's when everyone starts to see that, oh, hey, this worked. And then it worked again.
Right.
All of a sudden, there's less hesitation and things start to roll. And I think it's just part of the process. I mean, to say that the friction, to expect that the friction won't be there at all. I mean, I'd love to say that. I think it's probably unrealistic. Right.
Humans are minimal, humans,
right? There shouldn't be obstacles to working together. And that is a message that is fundamentally, to me, trickles down from the top.
I think you're right. And what's really interesting is, yeah, you brought it all the way back to that point of the people interaction, especially leadership. If I go back to that original question of, you know, what is the post-coronavirus sales marketing alignment look like? What I'm hearing is the importance of the human side of the business is going to continue to become more and more important. I mean, I've had a conversation recently with somebody on just the sales side where I really hate the message that's gone out that we need to be more empathetic now because of the pandemic, because of the economic fallout. Because my argument is, no, you were always supposed to be empathetic. It's just there's enough growth and there was just this focus on technology and how can we scale this and how can we just, you know, get big really fast and put people into our, you know, marketing funnel, that we got away from it. And now it's like, oh, we can't do that anymore. And so the need for empathy, which really is about human to human engagement, is so important on the sales side. But it sounds like it's just as telling in the internal conversations, where maybe the marketing leader or the sales leader, yeah, there's some ego involved, but they're also like, oh, we just need a new piece in our tech stack, right? We just need a new CRM thing or a new marketing automation thing or AI thing. And then our marketing and sales will be aligned versus, hey, we really need to work on the soft skills, right? We need to be able to actually engage as humans and collaborate, because that will actually lead us to the success we want. Am I off base on that, or is that right?
I agree. Actually had not thought about it that way at all. When I think of empathy right now is certainly important. I think about it more in the context of how we talk to prospects or customers, right? But I hadn't thought about it so much internally. So I think it's an interesting point that you're making. And, you know, it goes beyond communication in some way. I would even say, you know, at the risk of getting too tactical, it's sort of, you know, right now for many of us, you know, budgets are limited, right, or frozen, and yet we have resource needs, right? And we all do them. So sales needs more resources, whether it's a technology thing or it's more reps, and marketing needs more BDRs and more writers, whatever it may be, right?
And, right.
But there's trade-offs, you know, and maybe it's like, you know what, let's figure out, okay, you need two and I need one. Well, maybe we can get, you know, that's three. So let's get 1.5 and we can, you know, I'll give you some of my budget. You give me some of your budget and we share things out. Or, you know, there's that other aspect of empathy and collaboration,
right,
to consider as well, which I've experienced.
Yeah. And it would always be interesting. I wrote an article, and this is probably getting about 18 months ago, for LinkedIn's marketing blog. And it actually became one of their most viewed articles, and it was on sales and marketing alignment. And one of the ideas that I had suggested was, hey, marketing and sales, I mean, not the whole department, but a few representatives should actually have a meeting every 2 or 3 weeks and trade some insights, even marketing going to sales saying, hey, what are the objections you're getting? What are the stories that are resonating right now? And using that as a way to help direct their marketing messaging.
Yeah, and you know, it's surprising, interesting. I had said the same thing on a panel, I think, maybe over a year ago. And that's the human element again, right? It's just, yeah, talk to each other. No, don't just email each other or Slack each other or, you know, and with all due respect to those platforms, right? But Yeah, once a week, you know, have a get in the same room, or in this case, a Zoom, I guess, but and be honest with each other about what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right. And do you have that rapport that you feel you can have that honest conversation?
Right.
And so that's the human element. But the third piece I wanted to, well, actually go back to your original question when you said what is the future of sales and marketing alignment? And I said, well, it's really the foundation remains the same. We just have to do it better. So I think you said, yes, even more empathy. But I think also on the segmentation side of things, the go-to-market strategy, that's where there's an opportunity right now to be truly very, very smart and hyper-prioritize and really hyper-segment.
Okay, explain that to me. What do you mean by that?
Should you be reevaluating your ideal customer profile? You know, so if you are industry agnostic, right? Your service or product is good for multiple industries. Should you, assuming your resources are limited right now, should you really be going after all of them, or do you just pick two?
Right.
And based on the ones that are truly the best fit for you, or the ones that we know are doing, you know, better right now in this economy. So how can you be even smarter? But the principles, the foundation is still the same. It's just should you be tweaking it? Are there things you should be tweaking to be even more effective? But I don't think it's about wiping the slate clean and starting over about what alignment means or doesn't mean in the future. I don't think the fundamentals have changed.
Right. So it's almost using this time truly as an exercise in self-examination and self-awareness.
Yes, exactly.
And going, exactly. Is this, and I think you're right, because I definitely saw this over the last number of years, and very specifically talking about the tech world. But I think this also bled into a lot of industries where the economy was doing well, there was opportunity, you know, whether or not it was really there, we're seeing maybe a little bit of a house of cards, but it was just grow. So, hey, even if we thought we weren't industry agnostic, there's this other opportunity that's maybe it's good. Let's pursue that, and let's pursue this, and let's pursue that. You know, I saw this a lot, even with online tools trying to be everything to everyone. You know, the example I would use is MailChimp, which a lot of people are familiar with. And if you're not, it's an email platform to send out, you know, emails to your email list. But then they started like doing every kind of marketing. It was like, I remember joining them because I needed something to send emails to my subscribers. But then it was a landing page, and it was a CRM, and you could do offline marketing. You could mail stuff. And I'm like, wait, what are you doing? Just do the one thing I need really well. But to me, that was just, it was indicative of what was happening across a lot of companies, just trying to, as I said, be everything, because that's where the money is. And it sounds like you're saying, hey, maybe now is the time to see, like, is that really our sweet spot? Is that really what we should be doing?
Exactly. And so that's also alignment, right? Because you should be making these decisions together, right? So it's optimization. It's what is a sweet spot, and is it what we think it is, or do we need improvement there, and how do we, you know, take this opportunity for self-awareness, to evaluate, to take a hard look at truly what works and what doesn't. You know, we kind of get lazy sometimes. It's like, well, we know what works,
right?
And we know some things that kind of work okay, and I don't think right now is a time where the okay is good enough.
Well, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And so for a while, things weren't necessarily broken. It seemed to be working. And now a lot of things are broken, often through no direct fault to the organization, right? It's just the context, the environment has changed. But it's still a good, as you said, a good chance to look back and say, hey, was this really the right audience? Was this really the right messaging? I think to your point about having that as part of alignment, if you're in marketing, for example, it's going to your salespeople and go, hey, tell me what was really happening. Like, what were people really saying? Were we kind of forcing a round hole into a square peg? That's how you know you're in the middle of a nine weeks we've been in this so far pandemic, shelter in place, when you're completely mixing up your metaphors, a square peg into a round hole.
I never know which one it is. I always mix them. So you're not the only one.
Having those conversations internally, I mean, this can be, you know, I mean, a great time to do that reset. So it's that self-awareness, you know, with individual contributors, but also organizationally getting the different parts together and maybe even trying to bring in beyond sales and marketing. You said customer success or even, you know, product teams.
I was thinking the same. I mean, product roadmap, you know, that's another thing to take a look at. I mean, we're talking about sales and marketing alignment. That's why I'm focusing on those two groups, but really the reevaluation should be happening across the company.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's a really smart observation.
And hopefully we all come out of this even stronger than we were
right
entering it. Although unfortunately, you know, for some industries that will clearly not be the case. It's very sad what's happening in the hospitality industry and whatnot, but that's, right. I digress.
No, I mean, it's very true. I mean, it's going to be quite a shakeup. And I think one thing that's important to remember is, yeah, there are industries that are going to struggle a lot, but there's also opportunities, right? I remember somebody writing, I don't remember where I read this, but they basically had said, emergencies or crisis moments are not equally distributed. And what they were talking specifically was, you know, across industries, right? So for example, unfortunately, healthcare, very busy right now. If you make masks, you're busy. If you're in hospitality or you're an airline, yeah, not busy. But I think what they were pointing out, and I think it's wise to remember that even in crisis, there is a chance for, whether you call it opportunity or reinvention or looking forward to what is the next best step is still an important thing. And you had kind of touched on this, and I know obviously because I've known you for a while and we've had way more conversations than just this one, but even in your marketing capacity, you kind of have a much broader range of kind of purview than just marketing strategy. Because you have had a chance to have that vantage point. Well, I guess the first question is, how does that make you better at marketing? And how does that, how does it inform how you operate as a marketer and in both strategy and execution when you can see kind of across the silos, right? Into, you know, product, into customer success, into even just business strategy. What have you kind of gleaned from that?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. I mean, there's a couple of things. One is, you know, the more I understand, the more involved I am across the enterprise, right? The more I understand how the machine works, the more I can refine the marketing engine.
Right.
Just naturally. Because again, if I understand customer success and what they struggle with, for example, and where the gap is, what gaps they have, then I can better understand how marketing can support them. So that would be the customer marketing side of things. You know, sales enablement is another area.
Right.
It's related to marketing, but it isn't necessarily, right? But it's closely tied to content. So as we're building a sales enablement capability, I can better understand how marketing can build the right content to enable the account teams internally. So it allows us to be more, to deploy marketing resources the right way and just more effectively.
Right.
That in a way that really supports the needs of the organization.
Right.
Right. So because I have a greater visibility across the organization and the, let's call it the pain points, than I might have otherwise.
That's interesting. It makes me think of the book Range, which came out recently by David Epstein, where he was speaking in defense of or extolling the virtues of being more of a generalist and having a broad perspective and kind of not being just completely pigeonholed into your niche and into what you do. And it almost sounds like even beyond, again, the idea of sales and marketing alignment, it's really about having people poke their heads up from their silo and really understand what the business is working on as a whole, right? I've written articles about the idea of business acumen, being important for individual contributors like salespeople or marketers. And what I really just mean by that is the idea of, hey, understand how business works, not just your little thing you do, and not to demean the thing that you do, but it's, you know, the very narrow slice. Look at how that slice fits into the whole pie. And when you do, you get better at your little slice and or your individual slice, and it impacts the whole in a really positive way.
Right. And it's so first of all, I did not know the book, but now that you said generalist, I'm going to have to read it because I very much consider myself a generalist. And that was a very deliberate choice that I made or vision that I had for myself early in my career.
Yep.
And so it's been very much in my nature. It's been a constant for me to just have my, call it my swim lane, but then always add on more things outside of the swim lane.
Right.
So that really resonates with me. And when we were back to your question about how does it sort of impact my role as a marketer, it's also the prioritization and business planning, right?
Right.
I mentioned marketing support for the rest of the organization, but then, for example, at Mediafly, we do quarterly planning because we're a startup in a high growth phase. We're constantly iterating. Things are changing, right? I mean, we do have long-term planning, but we also look at things quarterly.
Right.
And so by the marketing, the quarterly marketing strategy and priorities that are built are in many ways informed by what I see is working or not working across the organization and where I feel marketing can play a role.
Right.
In a collaborative way, obviously, with the rest of the executive team.
Yeah.
So it makes us more effective.
Yeah, I love that.
Besides the fact that I enjoy it as well. So on a personal level, again, because I'm a generalist and I'm curious and I like to grow, to extend my tentacles, I like to see, find problems and help fix them.
Right.
So it also keeps me interested. I mean, that's just what turns me on. And so that's good for me also.
No, fantastic. And you know what? That is actually a great place for one of my non-smooth segues. because I know you do have a broad range of interests. And in fact, I know this because you are a good friend of my wife's. And I actually met my wife salsa dancing. And so when we first started dating, did a lot of salsa dancing. And she goes, "You've got to meet my friend Isabel. She is a fantastic dancer as well." And so we got a chance to meet and go out dancing, which was a lot of fun. So I know right now, you do a lot of like African dancing, and so you're very into Afrobeat music.
I was afraid about where this conversation was going to go next, but okay.
No. Well, I still remember if we want to talk about the one attempt to teach me kizomba, which was not my trip. It didn't work for me. But you're an amazing kizomba, right? Or kizomba.
Kizomba
yeah. Dancer.
Not to be confused with Zumba, which you teach, by the way.
Which I do. That's right in my wheelhouse. Yes.
Like dance exercise. No, one has nothing to do with that.
Right. Kizomba, I know like North African social dance. It's very cool. So when you say Afrobeat, like what does that mean? What kind of music is that? Describe it to me as if I knew very, very little about it. As if all I knew was Fela Kuti. And that's it.
Yeah. So it's interesting actually, because I'm not even sure what Afrobeat. Yeah. Originally when I think of Afrobeat, is the Fela Kuti, right?
Back okay. then.
But the term Afrobeat now, the way it's used today, is really essentially African pop.
Oh, okay.
So is how I would explain it broadly. So, and it originally really comes from, I want to say, I forget if it's Angola or South Africa.
Okay.
What they did is they basically took traditional African, ethnic sounds, which is the drums.
Okay, so like very polyrhythmic.
Yeah, and mixed it with pop.
Really? So, okay.
Western style instruments, really.
Okay.
So what you have is this combination that's very popular across Africa, and it's different. It's a very large umbrella category, right?
Sure.
So within Afrobeats, you have Afro House and you have Afro Trap and you have like different kinds of subcategories.
Okay.
But it's very percussion based, very heavy percussion based, but
sure.
with kind of almost want to say it's a little bit like hip hop with drums.
Okay. Oh, I love it.
It has very much, but it has very much, generally speaking, it has this R&B hip hop kind of feel, but with the heavy drums, you know, foundation, whether traditional drums or, you know, studio music.
Whatever. Oh, that's okay. Actually, I remember another guest, and this is going back a season or two, Jeff Davis and I talked about Afrobeat music, and now I'm remembering it. And he was sharing, kind of like this melding of kind of the traditional African music with the more pop Western sensibility, the different instruments.
Yeah. And you know, like hip hop too, or like R&B, so especially on the hip hop side of things, there are types of Afrobeats like Kuduro, for example, which is Angolan, which is very much like street dancing. And it's really a hard, very hard rhythm. And the lyrics are very much, there are a lot of cultural, political messages and undertones. Actually, they're not even undertones. It can be very direct.
Overtones.
overtones, yeah, in the lyrics, right? So there's the, within that, there's, like I said, there's kind of like politically driven lyrics. And then there's the softer, like sexy, like, you know, I want to seduce you kind of lyrics, right? And everything in between.
Right, so, right.
Yeah, I mean, it's that. That's how I think about it. You know, pop music, Western sounds are mixed with traditional sounds, and it's very, very dynamic. Obviously, it's you can listen to it, but I think it's hard to just listen to it without wanting to bounce across the room. But
right, drives the feet.
Wanting to dance, so yeah, it's just me.
Oh, that's well. I'm waiting for that then to come here to the United States, because you were kind of describing it. It also makes me think, for example, of the popularity of reggaeton right now in the United States. And I'm not saying it's like the most popular thing ever, but you brought up Zumba, and you know, for example, Daddy Yankee is kind of one of the big reggaeton guys, or Wisin and Yandel. Yeah, I think that's the right names. 5 or 6 years ago, when I was kind of starting out as a teacher and I was using their music, it was still kind of like underground. But now if I said Daddy Yankee, I mean, he's been on, I think, Saturday Night Live. And reggaeton is obviously coming from more of the Caribbean, more of the Latin sound, but also very African-driven, multi-polyrhythmic sounds, which is very different than kind of Western music. You even brought up hip-hop. Hip-hop is very not polyrhythmic, right? You have one drummer with a drum set, even going back to the idea of the funky drummer breakbeat. It's just a very simple drum beat. So I loved how Latin music has brought polyrhythm to kind of more Western music. And so I think it'd be really cool to get some Afrobeat coursing through the Western, or at least US.
Yeah, I'm and it's starting to happen. It's starting to happen, although it's more within kind of the international community, like or certainly the African community, African American community. So for those of us who are kind of involved in or like in African dance, you know, so you kind of have, there's a bit of a community, you know,
right.
And it's very popular in that community. I wouldn't say that it's gone mainstream yet, but I would expect that to happen at some point. I mean, it's certainly pretty widely appreciated across Europe already.
It'll show up. That's what happens. Yeah. You know, music gets cool somewhere else. And I mean, that's one thing that the US, for good and bad, has always been able to do. They find some cool stuff and they're like, hey, let's bring this to the States. And boom, there you go. The music shows up. Often from Europe, because we're like, wow, Europeans are cooler. Although not always, because here's my other segue. Europeans drink a lot of one of your favorite beers, which is, do you want to admit it?
I will admit, because I'm not a big drinker. So you know what? I'm not the expert. So disclaimer, yes, when I used to drink beer, and I lived in Europe, I used to drink Heineken. All right. So for those listening, please don't faint, especially in Chicago, because I know how important beer is in Chicago. So yeah, what can I say? I mean, I grew up with that. My beer palate is not very sophisticated.
I forgive you.
Yeah, and you know, I grew up in Greece, and I spent a lot of time on the islands and on the beach, and it was just—I mean, you had Amstel, you had Heineken, you had Fix, which is a Greek beer, and it just—you know—it's the—I still remember the crispness of the flavor, sitting on the beach, and it's hot outside, and I don't know. So it just—I think I associated with my homeland in many ways, even though it's not a good beer, obviously, but it's popular there. So I don't have I'm not going to speak to the taste of the beer versus anything else, because I'm, like I said, I'm not an expert.
That's totally fair. I'm just giving you a hard time. It's actually been a recurring theme this season about how different beers have a way of taking us back to specific memories and triggering those. Just like I would never defend Miller High Life as a great beer, but man, when it's hot in Chicago, you know, you're on the beach, you're at a cookout, it's one of my favorites. I love it.
I hope I haven't upset your sponsor by saying this.
No, hey, you know what? There's room for a multitude of tastes. And one thing I found too, when I was over in Europe, the Heineken there is different than the Heineken here.
Oh, really? Might be.
It's stronger over there. In fact, a lot Heineken brews a lot of the American brands that are in Europe as well. So brands like Budweiser or Coors.
So that makes sense to me too. And that might explain why most of the time I don't like American beers, because I find them to be too light.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Hey, now I know why.
There you go.
But you know, it's the same thing with other things like soft drinks like Coke, right? We all know that it doesn't taste the same across the pond.
Yep, for sure. And by the way, that is why you should drink a good craft beer, like one from our sponsor, because it has got a little more heft to it. There you go. I saved it. Hopefully you as a marketer can appreciate that.
When bars do reopen, maybe you can, you know, you and I can have one.
I look forward. Hey, at this point, I would gladly sit down and drink a Heineken with you. If that meant I could, if that meant I could sit there with you in a bar, and we will be able to sometime in the future. Amazing.
Oh yeah, I second that.
Well, this sounds like probably a pretty good place for us to wrap things up as we wax nostalgic for just the simple act of going to a bar. Isabel, I always ask all of my guests at the end of the show, what's one tip that you'd give someone to help them have a better day today?
We talked about empathy a lot today, and I would say be empathetic to yourself. Don't forget to be empathetic to yourself also, not just to others.
I love that. Super simple and super important. It's really easy to forget that we're a human too. And especially as we go through challenging times like a global pandemic and even the aftermath, you got to take care of yourself as well. So I love that. Isabel, if somebody wanted to continue the conversation, what's a good way for them to get in touch with you?
Best place is to find me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So it's my full name, Isabel Papoulias.
Perfect.
I also encourage people to visit evolvedselling.com. That's evolvedselling.com.
Okay.
That's the Evolved Selling Institute.
Oh, very cool.
Which is part of Media Fly. There's a lot of great content there about sales and marketing and alignment and a lot of the fun things we talked about today.
I love it. Fantastic. And we'll make sure to have all of those links in the show notes as well. And I feel that I defended them well during our conversation, but I do want to, of course, give a shout out again to Urban Renewal Brewing, located here in Chicago in the Ravenswood neighborhood. I have now finished my Doppelbach by them, the GOAT, greatest of all time. While I don't want to throw any fighting words around, I don't know if it was the greatest, but it was pretty darn good. So I would definitely check them out. And of course, if you can't find Urban Renewal Brewing in your local grocery store, or if you're not here in the Chicagoland area, go support your local craft brewery. Go stop by their bottle room, pick up a six pack, a four pack, a growler, whatever it might be, because they're a small business trying to make things happen. And we all got to stick together as we get through these interesting times. And with that, everyone, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us today. I look forward to having you on when we have our next interesting conversation. And until then, be well. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar, and we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.